That's what I do. But who listens to old Greta? Nobody. That's who.
She composed herself,
patting her coffered hair. Now, names and identification, please. I will schedule an appointment at Miss Belmont's earliest convenience.
I strode forward, grinning like an idiot. The tour guide looked apoplectic, searching for an immediate escape. I handed over my driver's license with gunners on top. She scanned his and opened her planner, flipping pages a few weeks ahead knowingly, speaking aloud.
There is an opening in 3 weeks on Wednesday. Shall that work, Agent Randolph and...
Her eyes widened, looking up at me, horrified.
Master Temple?
The one and only. I grinned.
Oh, bother. An old lady does have a loose tongue.
It's quite all right, I began.
No, it certainly is not. Foolish, foolish, foolish. I'm terribly sorry. I'll just page Miss Belmont and be packing up my pox then.
She was flustered, rearranging papers back and forth, utterly lost. I spotted a tear at the corner of one eye. I opened my mouth to speak, and she leveled a gnarled finger at me.
Oh, no, you don't. If I'm being fired, I'll do it with all the dignity an old lady can muster.
But she slapped her hand down onto her desk, like a clap of thunder.
No, you should be ashamed of yourself, letting me ratter on like that. Digging my own grave, you are everything I heard about you if you would do such a thing to an old woman. You don't need a role model. You need Jesus.
The last was a shriek. The door to Ashley's office flew open then. Gunner was pathetically trying to suppress a laugh, doubled over with his hands clasped around his knees. What in the hell is going on here? She saw me and blinked. Master Temple, is everything quite all right? I shrugged. I was trying to tell Greta that all is well and that I appreciate a little honesty now and then. Even a lot of honesty, I added with an appeasing grin. She scowled back. Anyway, no harm done. Mind if we talk to Miss Belmont, Greta? Her eyes were twin coals, her cheeks reddening with embarrassment now. She waved a hand, shooing us on. But her gnarled finger locked onto our tour guide, and her voice was low, dripping with venom as she proceeded to strip away his hide. Ashley looked bewildered, but stepped aside so that we could enter. The doors closed with a soft click behind us. What happened? Ashley asked carefully. She's an old woman. I don't know how you managed to get her so worked up. I was outside just 5 minutes ago. How could you have possibly gotten such a reaction in so short a time? Gunner spoke up between bouts of laughter.
He has a gift. Oh, God, my stomach.
He wheezed.
It hurts. Laughing so hard. Sometimes I wish I had his charm, and then other times.
He waved a hand towards Greta in the other room and began laughing all over again. Once he got a breath, he continued.
I'm glad I don't.
Ashley looked at me and I shrugged. She saw us and began talking about
that rapscallion Nate Temple.
I mimicked her aged voice. I should have stopped her sooner, but it was hard to get a word in. She's a tough old bag. I like her. Ashley studied me, fighting a grin. Me too. I'd like to keep her around for a while, without her having a heart attack on me. That sobered me up. Sorry. She nodded, motioning towards her desk. We followed, declining her offer of drinks. So, you have come about the video feed? She asked carefully, eyeing Gunner a few times when he wasn't looking. I nodded. She typed a series of commands on her iMac desktop. Well, I can't say I quite understand it. It seems to be a feed from a security camera that runs separate from the rest of the system. Nobody even knew of it until we had input your information into the system as an employee. As soon as your social security number hit the system, we got a critical ping. Anytime something important or dangerous happens at the company, the upper echelon of management gets a 911 email. This one came only to me and you. I leaned forward, interested. I haven't been able to open the feed. It's encrypted, and I have no idea what the password could be. Your parents gave me a list of potentials, but I regret to inform you that none of mine worked. I have been efficiently locked out. Our only hope is to see if you have access to it. May I? I asked, pointing at her desktop. She nodded, getting out of her chair and holding it out for me. I already logged off. Gunner leaned back in his chair, curiously watching the scene unfold, or possibly just watching Ashley. Puppy love. Did they even realize they were each checking the other out? She guided me through the login process, but then helped me open my email, which in turn asked me a series of questions that only my parents could have arranged years before. Successfully answering the questions, my email finally opened. There at the top of the page, marked with a blinking exclamation mark, was the 911 email. I double-clicked it, and a password warning popped up. I looked back at her, and she grinned sheepishly, stepping back and turning her head. I typed in the verse from Dante's Inferno that my father and I had frequently discussed through a tough semester in college. I flourished my finger dramatically and asked her a question. How many attempts did you have before it locked you out? 3, she answered nervously. Here we go, I said, then pressed enter. The password box wiggled a wrong answer. I mentally glanced at the list in my mind, wondering if any of the other passwords might work, depending on the severity level of my father's warning. I hadn't tried the last password yet, as I had been hoping that it might not be as serious as we all thought. I mean, how would the video feed know how important it was? It had to be something my father frequently monitored as a security precaution if it was automatically logged as such an important breach. Something others wouldn't have access to. Not even Ashley, judging by the fact that it had only appeared to her after my information was logged into the system. I leaned back, thumbing my lip at the puzzle. The room was as tense as a china cabinet in front of a live orchestra. Not thinking of a better idea, I typed the last password on my parents' list, realizing that the irony must be a coincidence. The title of a journal written by Isaac Newton about Nicholas Flamel, the alchemist who supposedly discovered the Philosopher's Stone, The Caduceus, The Dragons of Flamel. I typed Caduceus, remembering that the coin the Minotaur had given me depicted that very staff on one side. It was in my pocket now. Another discreet reference to Hermes, that boar looking into. The password box shook again in angry denial. Ashley unbuttoned the top button of her blouse, breathing heavily. One more shot. I don't think it was one of the passwords on their list, she added respectfully. I leaned back again, closing my eyes. She was right. It would have been too simple if it were the last password. I was letting my infatuation with dragons overwhelm my logic, but it had been the direst password on their list, so it had been worth a shot. I mentally zipped through memories of my father, trying to catch something, anything, that might give me a clue, an everyday password he would undoubtedly use. If it was to a secret video feed, then it was something he wanted kept separate, something he could privately monitor at his own leisure, which might mean a secret project. But why keep a project secret from his company? It must have been dangerous if he didn't deem it worthy of his employees' knowledge. I began to get a terrible feeling in my stomach. Was something here, in my new company, that he didn't trust any of his employees with, even his protege, Ashley Belmont? My memory snagged on a brief conversation we had while on a yacht in the middle of the ocean on my 21st birthday. Something I had only heard once. Something that only I had heard. I slowly leaned forward one last time. Surely it couldn't be. That had been a night of hard drinking, a sharing of talk like we had never had before. An introduction into manhood, he had called it. We had talked until the sun came up, on everything from ancient alchemy to modern-day particle theory at CERN, from Aristotle to Ayn Rand, from Greek myths to the Bible's revelations, from one topic to another in almost every field of study. Then we had briefly discussed extremes, extreme measures in particular. My forearms pebbled as I remembered the last two words that he had uttered as we had drifted off to sleep on the deck. He had repeated them 3 times, and then fallen asleep. I had merely assumed it was a disturbing thought from some vague mention of one of our topics, as we were both heavily intoxicated, but my eidetic memory was profound, and I had remembered those words despite the fact. Only now did I consciously drag them up from the bottom of my memory, and the feeling of that wonderful night threatened to break me. I hunched over the keyboard, shivering both in fear of the tone of voice he had used to utter the words, and also in profound loss, realizing all over again that I would never have the chance to speak with him again. My fingers punched in each key, slowly, robotically. Pandora. Protocol. I hoped my capitalization was correct, or that the password was even correct. It was a far-fetched idea, to be honest. It didn't feel right. One drunken night years ago. My father was much too methodical for that, right? I looked up at Gunnar. His eyes revealed how much it hurt him to see me so grief-stricken. I turned to Ashley. Her eagerness was gone, as her eyes filled with empathy. She slowly reached over to place a hand on my shoulder. If this isn't it, then it doesn't matter. He can't expect us to type in a password that we were never given. It's no one's fault but his own if he created an unbreakable encryption that was important enough for us to see, but not important enough to receive a hint. We couldn't expect that, she repeated.
Oh, yes. Yes, he could. He would demand it, I whispered.
Without further preamble, I pressed my finger to the enter key, the same way I would have pressed the lethal injection button at a sanctioned execution of an innocent man. The computer chimed above me as my eyes were still locked on the enter key. Realizing the password had worked, my shoulders slumped further.
No, please not this. He couldn't have.
My father had kept his promise then. His secret project had indeed been real.
Was that why my parents had been killed? Had someone discovered his secret work?
I slowly lifted my gaze to the screen. Ashley was shifting nervously from foot to foot behind me. I clicked play. It flickered to life instantly. I read the timestamp on the recording as I waited for something to happen. It must have been a motion-activated camera, because it jumped ahead at random intervals, and only when someone was walking past a particular door. As each person did, a name would materialize at the bottom of the feed. Jenna Davis. Accountant. Regular. I began to frown after seeing the first few people caught on film. Each time one passed, their name, title, and the word regular would appear at the bottom of the screen. I felt a chill at the back of my neck. Each person would walk by the door as if it didn't exist. One woman dropped a paper, and it landed directly in front of the door. She glanced down at the ground, searching back and forth as if trying to see the paper that was barely 2 inches away from her toes. But she didn't seem to see anything. She checked a few papers in her hand, frowned, and then glanced at the floor again. With a sigh, she turned back the way she had come. 5 minutes later, she reappeared on camera, walking briskly past the discarded piece of paper on the ground, without a care in the world. We looked at each other curiously. Gunnar had stepped behind the computer to watch.
Is she blind? It was right in front of her.
Ashley spoke up. She has perfect vision. She also isn't a regular. Sure enough, the word regular hadn't appeared at the bottom of the screen, but no elaboration had been listed either. We turned back to the camera to watch a few more people enter and leave the frame. Then, my parents came onto the screen. Their forms sparkled, like radio disturbance on the feed, but all else was clear. They conversed casually, leaning against the wall beside the odd door, glancing out of the camera's view frequently. Then, in the middle of speaking, they both darted inside the door and then closed it behind them. A minute later, someone walked near the door, looked back and forth, searching, then turned away, as if he had been searching for my parents.
Creepy, I said warily.
Can you pause it? Ashley asked. I did, and turned to her. That door doesn't exist, she said simply. I arched a brow at her. Look at the symbol above the door. It's the Omega symbol. I recognize the hallway and know I've walked past that stretch of camera at least 2 dozen times in the last week, but I have never seen that door.
It's cloaked, then, I told him.
It was as if I spoke a foreign language. Hidden. Secret. Hocus pocus. I waggled my fingers.
Then how can we see it on this feed? And how does the camera know all the information about each passerby?
Gunnar asked. I pondered that. It must be why this camera is off the main system. It's unique. It can see anything, even through magic. I bet it could even sense... I began, looking at Gunnar, and then stopped. I had been about to say that it would probably reveal his wolf form, but Ashley didn't know about that. You were going to say that it would probably show Gunnar's werewolf form? She said simply, as if reading my mind. You're right. It would. I designed the software, but never thought of merging it with live cameras. We each turned to her, eyes wide. I know almost every freaking town. Your parents kept tabs on everyone. You would be surprised at some of them, but your secret is safe with me, Agent Randolph. No one else here knows. She smiled, unabashed.
Well, isn't that something? I added.
You will be granted access to the Arcanum that your parents compiled whenever you wish, she told me as if it were nothing out of the ordinary. My thoughts were racing. My parents had indeed pursued their secret, then. It couldn't be anything else. I'm going to keep playing the feed, I said. Everyone nodded, leaning closer. The feed jumped forward 17 minutes. Then my parents bolted out the door, each leading in a different direction. Odd. 10 minutes later, a shadow blinked across the hallway, and a new figure stepped into view. A string of question marks appeared at the bottom of the screen. The figure didn't sparkle like my parents. He seemed to be cloaked in shadows, as if outlined by them. He looked each direction and then slipped up to the door he shouldn't have been able to see. He fiddled with the handle a moment and was then inside the room, the door closing behind him. The feed blinked red for a few seconds, the word, unidentified intruder, blinking, instead of the string of question marks from before. The feed jumped ahead 17 minutes again, and then he slipped out of the room, darting down the hallway in the same direction my mother had left. Less than a minute later, my dad entered the feed, sparkling with his name at the bottom of the screen. He studied the door, seeming nervous. Then he lifted his eyes to the security camera and spoke silently. His face was haggard. I studied it carefully, reading his lips, and my blood ran to ice. Then he set off in the same direction as the intruder. A steel door slammed down over the invisible door, securing it from any future tampering, and then the feed stopped. The video feed jumped ahead half an hour and then froze, blinking the date and time in large red letters. The only other letters on the screen were Titan. Then it shut off, the whole computer shutting down and rebooting. I stood urgently, pacing back and forth. No one spoke. My mind scattered, rebelling against my futile attempts to control my fury. I felt my power rising up inside me like a tidal wave. I finally spoke, panting uncontrollably. The feed stopped within 1 minute of the time of death announced by the coroner. That feed was somehow tied to my parents' heartbeat, stopping as soon as they died. That can't be possible, I said, exasperated. Still, no one spoke. I rounded on Ashley. Do you know anything about this? I demanded. She shook her head urgently. Nothing, I swear. Gunnar spoke softly.
You understood what he said to you.
It wasn't a question. I turned to him slowly.
Oh, yes. I understood it perfectly. I continued pacing, trying to keep up with my fleeting thoughts. Care to share?
He asked sympathetically. I ignored him as the computer chimed back to life. I flew to the desk, logged back in, and signed into my email. But the video feed was gone. I logged off and strode out of the room, Ashley and Gunnar barely keeping up. Greta stood, looking horrified as she saw my face. A box was neatly packed on her desk.
You.
I leveled an angry finger at her, my power leaking out enough to launch a flurry of papers from her desk into the air. She squeaked like a child, terror filling her eyes as a tempest of papers floated down around her like snow.
Are not leaving my company. Sit down.
My voice was rough with emotion. She obeyed, collapsing into her chair with a faint squeak of hinges. Then I was off again. I called over my shoulder.
We'll be in touch, Miss Belmont. We will definitely be in touch.
I turned my head to look her in the eyes over my shoulder.
Soon.
Gunnar followed in my wake, like a good dog as the Master Temple stormed out of his castle to pick a fight with a dragon, or the Minotaur, or some helpless bystander who happened to tick him off on the way. Someone was going to die. Soon. By my hand. And I was going to relish every second of it. But first, we were headed to the Expo Center to try to learn something about the dragon's sudden interest in the eclipse tomorrow afternoon. Maybe I would get the chance to kill someone there. One could dream.
Chapter 27. We had picked up Tori, and we were headed into the parking lot at the Eclipse Expo, or so the sign said. The hotel was vast, full of auditoriums designed for conferences and proms, loaded with luxurious restaurants, several spas, and a smattering of gift shops. I had been in a daze since leaving Temple Industries, pondering the implications of my father's last message to me. He had known it was the end, or at least seriously assumed it to be the case. He had relied so heavily on my eidetic memory and skill of lip-reading, and even the knowledge of a password that had mostly been a lucky guess. Now I had one answer, but it only led deeper into the rabbit hole, giving me countless more questions. When this was all over, I would bury myself in solving their secret before it was too late.
if it wasn't too late already. It was too volatile of a project to be left unattended, and it had been over a week. Being so distracted, I had barely noticed Tori joining us. Her and Gunnar had made small talk while we drove, complimenting each other's clothing, but I had been mostly ignoring them. Not purposely, just so enveloped in my own thoughts that nothing else had mattered. My phone vibrated in my pocket. I plucked it out, glanced at the screen, and then answered.
Master Temple.
I recognized the nasally voice instantly. Go fuck yourself, Kosugi. Then I hung up, calmly placing the phone back into my pocket. I didn't give one flying hell about the cops right now. The silence that ensued in the car was as delicate as brittle glass. Gunnar turned the car off and waited for me to compose myself. I blinked, looking around as if surprised. You two ready? I asked. Gunnar nodded, and I heard Tori agree. I opened my door and rappelled the 12 feet down to the pavement. I quickly unlatched Tori's door and opened it for her. Her hand was reached out to do it for herself. I held out a hand to help her since she was wearing bright blue heels. She stared at me, slightly surprised. How did you move so fast? She whispered very seriously. I blinked back. Pardon? Gunnar was watching me warily.
All I saw was a blur, and I'm a werewolf. You have never moved like that before.
I looked from one to the other for a few moments and then shrugged uneasily. My guard is down. You might see me do a few things tonight that shouldn't be possible. A wizard's life is all about control, and presently I seem to have none. I'll need you to be my compass between right and wrong, normal and irregular. Do you think you can do that for me? I asked, unsure of myself for the first time in a very long time. I never asked others to help me, but I honestly felt like my head was stuffed with wool, and yet somehow that I was thinking clearer than I ever had before.
Perhaps it would be wise for you to wait in the car while Tori and I search the expo center, Gunnar offered. And hanging up on Kosugi probably wasn't your best idea.
I shook my head urgently. A werewolf and a She-Hulk might not be enough if we run into company. They could mind-fuck you without me there to protect you. Remember the raven at my shop? She almost had you until I stomped all over her mind web. His face turned red, remembering all too well. Just keep an eye out for me. I seem to have less restraint than usual, and I feel stronger, which doesn't make sense. It almost feels the same as when I was first coming into my powers as a teenager. Perhaps I am reaching another plateau of strength. I didn't mention the oddity of the thief stumbling directly into the cops by the river. The less they knew, the better. Plus, my distortion of chance might work to our advantage inside the expo center. Gunner's eyes widened at that.
Aren't you already stronger than most other wizards?
I nodded.
Is this spike normal?
I chewed my lip for a moment. I don't think so. At least, not to this degree. I reached further with my hand, offering it to Tori. She finally accepted and allowed me to help her out of the SUV. I stepped back, eyeing her up and down speculatively. Stunning. Simply stunning. Her cheeks warmed at the obvious interest. And you call me Archangel? You look like Aphrodite. Her sleek white dress hugged her hips, leaving little to the imagination. It was slit at the side to reveal a thigh somehow still tanned from the summer. Either that, or she carefully maintained a natural-looking fake tan. She looked classy, yet dangerously seductive, like a James Bond girl. I reached out a hand, but hesitated. May I? After a glance to Gunnar, she nodded, obviously wary of my previous warning. You two have nothing to fear from me. I don't think. I delicately brushed her curled hair back to reveal her bare shoulder. I appraised her as if contemplating a purchase. Without asking, I unclasped the delicate chain necklace around her throat and replaced it with a heavy diamond choker from my suit pocket. Not my intended purpose for the jewelry, but I had backups. Her eyes widened at the obvious quality of the necklace. I handed hers back, and she tucked it into her purse. This is better. It's flashier. And less likely to get in your way if you need to move, I said. I studied her face, admiring her skill with a brush. The makeup was definitely eye-catching, but it was missing something. Do you have any bright red lipstick? She nodded, digging in her purse. I motioned for her to continue. She applied it expertly. It was as if she had suddenly found a spotlight, lips gleaming like fresh blood. She looked perfect. I glanced at Gunnar, looking him up and down, calculating.
I don't have any lipstick, Nate, so don't bother.
I smiled back. He looked every inch the modern Viking. Nordic features flashed harshly in the afternoon light. I simply nodded approval, and he rolled his eyes.
Who gets to judge you?
Gunnar grumped. How about our delicate Tori? I can think of nothing that would make your outfit better. She appraised my tailored silver suit with more than approval, as if I was a dinner plate, and she was starving. I even like the James Dean look of the loose tie. You look very Rat Pack. Rugged, yet refined. Is dress really that important to you? Sartorial skill is a powerful weapon. Sometimes that is a huge advantage. Ever read Sherlock Holmes? I asked. She shook her head. I just saw the new movie. An adequate portrayal. But one should read Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in order to glimpse the full scope of how vital the right set of garments could aid one in a time of need. Disguises are a perfect sleight of hand. Think of a strip club. I assume you visited one. I asked without thinking. Her face turned a shade darker.
Once or twice,
she answered guardedly. I just know that someone in law enforcement must see the darker shades of life in order to be competent at his or her career. Imagine a dancer wearing nothing at all. Her face flushed darker.
Nate, Gunnar warned. Compass says no.
Point heard, but allow me to elaborate. He finally nodded, protective of Tori. Her natural curves. I carefully brushed Tori's side, making her arms pebble, and her moist red lips opened instinctively as she took a breath. Will no doubt catch the eye, but the surprise has already been given. There is not much more to see. Boring. Now imagine an extreme outfit on a dancer. A nurse, for example. Catches one attention. But without the right circumstances, it's too flashy to keep your interest. She's flaunting herself too obviously. You know she's there to take it off. Again, boring. Now, lastly, imagine a stunning woman step out onto the stage, fingers adoringly caressing the pole, eyes intent. She is wearing a flattering dress, like Tori here. Tori's lips are still parted, her breathing deeper as she stared into my eyes. Her hair is tied up with chopsticks. Then she stares straight into your eyes and pulls the chopsticks out, her hair cascading down her shoulders like a waterfall. My fingers slipped Tori's hair before I trailed the back of my nails down from her shoulder to her elbow. She shivered again. You don't know what's about to happen next, or how long it will go on, but you can't turn away from her gaze. Then, her hand carefully unzips the dress down the side, revealing an artfully tattooed ribcage, and then she begins to swing around the pole, masterfully, owning everything in the room. No one moves. Then she looks over her shoulder at you, and clack. She slams her stiletto down onto the stage, making you spill your drink slightly. You can't decide whether to meet her eyes or stare at the tease of flesh where the zipper dangles loose. She bends down at the hips, coming to hands and knees, and slowly crawls towards you with the grace of a predatory feline, eyes pinning you to your seat. Tori was panting, and Gunnar looked stunned. Tori stepped back, resting a hand against the SUV for support. I didn't realize I had stepped closer to Tori. Now, tell me which has the bigger impact. Neither spoke, so I continued. That is the power of one's attitude and choice of dress. It ruled the European courts for centuries, power flashing from one to another with every change in fashion. There is a reason for every thread, every smile, and every flick of the hair. Everything matters. You live by this, or you can die by a smile that you didn't mean to give. The people we will be running into in the future live by this. You better learn it. But until you do, I will be the group's fashionista, if that is okay with you two. They nodded, regaining their breath. Tori looked to me as if she had never seen me before.
Was that magic?
She whispered. I smiled back. Yes. Her shoulders sagged in relief, but not directly. Artfully choosing your attire and the attitude to match it is a very, very powerful magic, but it isn't magic like you saw on the bridge. I simply tapped into your imagination, feeding the flames of my point against your own personal experiences. What you felt was entirely genuine and came from your own mind. I just helped reveal it to you. I leveled her with my eyes, smiled confidently, and then turned away. Shall we? They followed me towards the entrance. I hoped I was right. I didn't think I had used magic in my example, but with as much power as was coursing through me, I honestly wasn't sure. As soon as I had met up with Gunner, I had felt my strength bubble back up, my skin tingling. Then after seeing the video feed, my power had threatened to burst out of me. It had taken a long meditative car ride to Tori's house before I was confident that I was in control. But once she climbed inside the car, it had gotten worse. Something was happening to me, and I hadn't the slightest idea what it was. I had never heard of such a large jump in power around my age, not without aid, but I hadn't done anything that would increase my power base. There were ways to measure it quantitatively, but I hadn't had any time to sit down and do so with my usual spells. It was like weightlifting. I knew I felt stronger, but without pushing myself to max out on the bench press, I had no way to know exactly how much stronger I truly was. I would have to keep it under tight control for the time being. Power could be good, but it could also be bad. It was up to the user, and as power increased, it sometimes had a tendency to change an individual. Here's to me not becoming an all-powerful sociopathic wizard over the next few hours. Huzzah! Chapter 28. Originally, I had been surprised that the expo was taking place during the day, but after further contemplation, it made perfect sense. A solar eclipse couldn't be experienced at night, hence the word solar. Sometimes I can be thick, but I blamed it on the rough few days before me. There was a surprising number of people at the expo, wandering from table to table in the main atrium, accepting flyers, drink samples, and various other marketing ploys hoping to cash in on the tourists, and there were tourists aplenty. I heard a speaker from behind the closed doors of an auditorium, but ignored it. We each had accepted stickers for our names upon arrival, and Gunner and Tori chuckled at my choice of names.
"Discreet. Very discreet," Gunner laughed.
I spied a police officer near the entrance, and his face visibly paled upon seeing me. I grinned back, showing teeth. Gunner shook his head. The police officer began urgently speaking into the radio attached to his shoulder, no doubt informing my good friend, Captain Kosugi, of my whereabouts. Gunner and Tori were stunned at the cost of tickets at the front door, but were then relieved to find that I had already paid for them in advance. Tori tried to pay for hers, but Gunner knew better after years of friendship.
"Please, your money is no good here," I answered softly, hiding her offer of cash from any casual passerby.
I was buzzing with power, and I had to find an outlet. Flirting helped. There was magic in flirting, that rush of endorphins when it's win or lose, and you're trying to impress the fairer sex. I just wanted to make it out of here intact, and I needed Gunner and Tori to be on their game to accomplish that, before Kosugi found a reason to drag me downtown. I whispered, leaning close to Tori, as if for a kiss. Gunner took his cue, and snatched us each a flute of champagne, as if he had been waiting too long for the waiter to make his rounds. "I need you to play the part. Expect me to pay for you. You were a treasured gem on my arm, nothing more. A casual dalliance for the evening. A flower on my lapel." I traced the backs of my fingers down her neck in a very, very intimate way, as I sensed her shoulders tightening at my words. "Doucement, my precious orchid." I said a pitch louder as the mayor and his wife walked past us. The mayor winked knowingly at me, nodding approval before his wife elbowed him sharply in the ribs. I continued on with a knowing grin to the mayor as he frowned at my name tag. "Remember, this is a charade, a play, and we are the leads. I need you to watch my back, because here there be monsters." I breathed, pulling away with a dark smile. Her eyes dilated as she studied me, and then gave a brief nod. I placed my other hand on her waist, looking to the entire world like a man staking a claim on his prize. "The less others think of you here, the better. It makes any change of character all the scarier." I gently pressed my lips against the carotid artery on her neck, and then leaned back. I held out a blind hand expectantly, and Gunner placed a flute of champagne in my fingertips. I raised it to Tori's lips. "Drink, my sweet." She nodded weakly, accepting the drink with shaky fingers. I noticed her knees were quivering, so I kept my hand on her waist. Gunner offered me my drink and took a long pull, savoring the pricey bouquet. Cake bread, if I had to guess. Palatable. Tori leaned in close to me.
"Are you a vampire?"
she asked, face smiling in a good mask. I shook my head, curious. Why would you ask such a thing? She trembled.
Because I can't help but listen to you. You're just so adorable. It's like twilight is happening to me.
I blinked at her sudden change of character. She didn't seem like the twilight kind of gal.
Do you have this effect on all your girls?
If that isn't magic, I don't know what is. She giggled oddly, a sound that seemed out of countenance for her. Then her eyes widened in sudden delight.
Oh, I'm going to go freshen up.
She took off like a rocket to the restroom. I turned to get her, but he just smiled, amused. I took a swallow of my drink, barely keeping the shock from my face. I had always been good with women. In fact, I was very good, but never this good. I groaned. She was right. It was as if my power was oozing out of everything I did. Without an outlet, it was making its own release. That meant that I had gained even more powerful than I realized after the attack on the bridge. But why? I frowned thoughtfully. It seems we might be in a bit of a pickle, Gunner. I noticed that one of his cuffs were loose, allowing him easy access to his tattoo. His eyes roamed the room like a lion, lazy, but hungry.
Why?
I'm leaking power on you two. He arched a brow.
So?
I blinked. Have you noticed anything out of the norm? You are unusually copacetic towards me. You usually disagree and make everything more difficult. You were good at acting, but without question you wandered off to grab us each drinks. That is something Dean would do, but never you. Something is wrong. I think my power is pulling whatever attitude I want out of you two. He sipped his drink.
I just feel peaceful. But now that you mention it, I don't think I've ever felt this mellow before. Calm, I mean, we are here to hunt murderers, or find why your father left you that note, but I am not stressed out at all.
He thought about that for a minute.
I'm not even worried that I am not stressed.
See, I was worried about myself needing a compass, but it seems that I have gained control of myself at the expense of you two.
So what's different about Tori? You barely know her, so why do you think she's acting different?
I think she took my eye candy advice literally and has lost all common sense. She called me adorable, and apparently she has a thing for Twilight.
Despicable movie. Werewolves get shafted the whole time. Jacob totally kicks more ass than Edward.
I wanted to slap the shit out of him, but he continued.
Adorable, eh? Man, I hate being that third wheel.
He grumbled.
But it's cool, I guess.
He said, already falling back into his easygoing manner. I groaned inwardly. Tori was walking out of the bathroom, eyes dancing with joy as she smiled at both of us.
Right. We need to hurry this up.
I'll try to guard you two, but I don't know how well I can manage it, I said for our ears only.
Whatever, Nate. I'm fine,
Gunner said casually.
He's cute when he pouts.
Tori giggled, snatching up a second flute from a waiter. She guzzled the majority of it.
I love this necklace. Does it look pretty on me?
I nodded, studying her acutely. Gunner frowned, snatching up his own refill of champagne.
I am not cute.
He took a pull from his drink.
And I'm not pouting.
I wanted to scream, but we had to maintain our profile for the guests. Any one of them could be my parents' murderer, or they might know something that could help me with the dragons. I placed my palm on Tori's wrist and concentrated. My mind finally quiet, I suddenly noticed the creeping tendrils of power oozing from me to my two companions. I quickly withdrew them, but a dozen more tendrils shot out into the people around us. The attendees had been studying us a moment ago, but now they each looked around, confused for a moment, before turning away from us as if we didn't exist. I groaned. Tori shook her head with a frown, and then blushed furiously. Gunner was instantly alert, tension knotting his brow.
I am so embarrassed,
Tori began, trying to tug her arm away. I held her hand tight, feeling slightly off balance. No, it was flattering. Please don't be embarrassed. Remember how I told you I needed you to be my compass and keep me in line? She nodded. Well, I seem to have temporarily passed off my lack of control onto you two. It's my fault.
I despise bimbos. I never act like that. And I hate Twilight,
she adamantly whispered. Then her pupils began dilating wider.
Do you think this dress looks good on me? Because I think hers looks like trash.
She pointed at the mayor's wife, and the woman blanked, hearing her.
Shit.
Can we check out some of the souvenir tables?
Gunnar asked calmly. The power was hitting everyone now. I hastily drew it all into myself, and my eyes grew dazed, flecks of sparkling white flickering here and there as I steadied myself. The power tendrils were diminished, but several still latched onto my companions. Tori and Gunnar were more alert again, studying me.
I'm confused,
Tori mumbled, rubbing at her temples.
This was crazy. I had no idea what was happening to me. Was it dragons? I mentally examined myself, but realized that it was all me. Let's just get this over with. Follow me, I commanded sharply. They each shrugged, Tori quickly snatching my hand. I wasn't able to fully block them from my draining power, but it was a bit better than before. I used a brisk pace to help distract us. Just keep everyone moving. Maybe that would help.
As we slipped through the crowd, I allowed several tendrils to leak out of me whenever a group of people I didn't want to talk to would attempt to move towards us. I was, after all, a celebrity in town. Everyone wanted to be seen conversing with the Master Temple. Photographers mingled here and there. I pointedly used my power to guide them away from me. I didn't want a swarm of paparazzi following us. I wanted to find out anything that might help us and then get the hell out of here. I had, perhaps, 2 hours until sunset, when I would have to fight Asterion. We needed to hurry. Without warning, a thick tendril shot out of my control, darting through the crowd to latch onto a curvy, tall woman in a red dress. As if in slow motion, she turned to stare at me over her shoulder. I saw a grin split her cheeks. It was the jogger I had seen outside the courthouse with Gunnar, the one who had given me a number, but no name. My cherry Danish. Gunnar grumbled about the world being unfair. Then, Gold Digger. Tori's hand tightened in mine, her nails pressing into my palms. My control slipped a bit as the jogger approached.
Well, well, well. I've been waiting for you to call me, but it seems like you found a different piece of candy for the evening.
Perhaps later,
she purred. She studied Tori from head to toe, nodding her approval.
Nice choice.
Her eyes focused on my chest, exactly where the dragon tooth lay.
I shivered, imagining that she could see it.
Gunnar laughed loudly. I need a stiffer drink.
Tori's hand squeezed tighter, and I knew my control was slipping even further.
She's really pretty. But am I prettier?
She asked softly. The jogger stepped in closer, and her body heat hit me like a wave of power. Her hips brushed mine as her warm palm touched my chest, her pupils dilating. Something slid across her iris, revealing a glimpse of a horizontal black bar, and I blinked.
Contacts? Shit.
I jumped back, slamming my lack of restraint solely into the jogger. She stumbled and then shook her head as if dazed.
Dragon,
I whispered. She nodded, happy that she could please me with an affirmative answer. Gunnar and Tori both started at that, momentarily refocusing. Without a thought, I simply commanded her, and she obeyed.
Who are you?
Misha.
What color are you? I asked, terrified that the other dragons were possibly surrounding us. She tapped her finger against the fabric of her dress in answer.
Red?
A nod. You tried to kill me on the roof of the courthouse, then gave me your number after. Were you wearing contacts then, too? I asked, disgusted at my own stupidity. She nodded, her edgy blonde bangs brushing her thin jaw.
It wasn't very nice of me to do what I did, but I can make it up to you.
Her eyes promising a very dark and appealing payment.
Sex.
Perhaps another time, I muttered.
I'll go check out those tables, I guess,
Gunnar offered, not seeming to care one way or another.
Can you grab me one of those cute telescopes?
Tori clapped her hands delightedly.
No. None of us are going anywhere.
The girl sagged, frowning. Gunnar shrugged.
Misha, I want you to take me to your leader.
But you are my leader,
she answered simply.
Huh?
That was helpful.
No, before me. You were following the orders of someone else. Is he here?
She looked genuinely puzzled for a few seconds, and then understanding dawned on her. She nodded.
Can you introduce me to him?
She squeaked in excitement and snatched up my hand, drawing Tori and me off bodily into a secluded hallway.
The dragon father is this way.
Gunnar followed behind us, glancing unconcernedly at paintings decorating the wall. I was leading a pack of fumbling idiots, so what did that make me? Tori whispered into my ear,
She works out, but her butt needs attention.
She pointed at Misha's rear end. My face flushed, but luckily, Misha didn't appear to notice.
That one looks like you, Gunny.
Tori giggled, pointing at a painting of Vikings. Gunner's chest swelled with pride as he nodded, not even hearing the pet name. What had I just gotten myself into? Meeting the Dragon Father? The one who had been trying to kill me for the last few days?
Hey, Dragon Father. I noticed that you had been trying to kill me lately, so just wanted to swing by and say hello.
Right. And I wondered why I always found myself in dangerous situations. Gunner began whistling lazily behind us, totally useless as a guardian. I struggled to withdraw a heavy tendril latched onto him, and his eyes immediately began to clear. He looked from me to the two stunning women pulling me down the hallway.
Is this a good idea?
He asked with a frown. Probably not. Try something for me. Touch your tattoo and keep your finger there. He frowned, but did so. All right. I'm going to release my restraint for a second. He nodded, and I let go of my precarious grip. Gunner flinched for a second, and then growled at the air in front of him, as if he could see the tendrils trying to latch onto him. His awareness was simply too strong for my careless tendrils to overcome him while he touched his tattoo. I almost clapped my hands, but of course, each was firmly trapped in a different girl's hand. Keep touching it. It's the only way for you to stay focused. He nodded, now studying the hallway like a caged tiger as he followed us. I let go of Misha's hand, smiling at her curious glance back, and motioned her on. Her dress was open to the top of her tailbone, revealing a flat, muscled back and a gentle curve as it crept lower to her rear. It didn't at all agree with Tori's claim.
Tori, I whispered.
She beamed up at me.
I need you to focus on your strength, your unique ability. Can you do that?
She looked puzzled.
I think it's cute,
I added.
Really? You think it's cute?
I nodded, forcing a smile.
Okay, then.
Her eyes strained for a minute, struggling against my power seepage. I didn't want to risk pulling it away from her in case it affected Misha, too. She took a quick breath, and then stared up at me, eyes clear, but wide.
Wow, the stupidity is gone,
she stated bluntly. I'm so sorry that I put you through that. Can you control yourself now? She nodded, face set in determination.
I want to make something very clear, though, Nate. You scare me. Do you normally have more control than this?
I nodded.
Good. You just made me look like an idiot. I had no filter for my thoughts, and that is flat out embarrassing.
I felt guilty as hell. How about we just pretend this didn't happen? I offered.
Please.
She answered, cheeks rosy. We continued on in silence before she spoke again.
Do you think she's cute?
I blinked back. Am I still leaking power on you? Tori shook her head.
No, I just think she's cute.
I looked at her. Sure, but she's a dragon, and she tried to kill me.
There is that.
There was a longer silence.
Do you think when this is all finished, if she switches sides, of course, she'll go out for a drink with me?
I didn't have the slightest clue how to answer Tori.
Sure, you're beautiful.
She smiled at that, so I chose subtly next.
I take it you like girls. I'm bisexual, but my tendencies lean more towards women most of the time.
I was quiet for a few moments before answering. I'm pretty sure that if I was born a girl, I would be a lesbian too. You girls are just so damn adorable. She turned to look at me, and then began laughing loud enough for Gunner to grumble unpleasant things behind me.
My life.
Chapter 29. Misha stopped in front of a large single door. The number 901 stood above it, marking it as one of the priciest suites in the hotel. Two women, dragons, I assumed, stood outside the door, guarding their dragon father. They also wore contacts, hiding the horizontal slits of their eyes. I couldn't believe I hadn't thought of that sooner.
Misha, what have you brought us? And why can I not feel you? An African-American dragon hissed.
Her eyes were a bright green, but I didn't know if that was the contacts or her real eyes.
Snacks. She sniffed the air in our general direction. Wizard. A werewolf.
and an appetizer. She smiled at Tori. Tori simply smiled. I spoke. I wish to declare the accords in effect. We chose to come in peace, and you will abide by that, or the Dragon Nation will be destroyed by the Academy. I had absolutely no authority to command such a thing on behalf of the ruling body of wizards, but they didn't know that. The dragons tensed, grimacing, as if tasting something displeasing. Then where is your gold? Your diamonds? A gift befitting the Dragon Lord must be offered, lest he feel slighted, the second dragon argued, her orange eyes smoldering. Or is this appetizer our diamond? She does have a fine collar on. Perhaps she is an obedient little kitty cat. Having already given Tori the diamond necklace, I produced a gold bar from my pocket instead. Gunnar and Tori's eyes widened. My suit had been reinforced and tailored to hold heavy objects, without dragging the entire suit down in a noticeable way. I like to carry odd things on my person every now and then. I bring gifts, even for the guard dogs. I tossed the bar to the first dragon, and she practically quivered at the slight. Open the door, Misha. I won't be kept waiting. Misha complied, still pleasantly grinning at the apparent promise I had made of sex later. We walked inside, and there he was. I idly wondered whether I should address him as Dragon Lord or Dragon Father, since I had heard both titles, but didn't really care if I ended up using the wrong one. I already had enough friends. He was older, but looked to be in the prime of his life. Silver streaks jetted back from his temples, fading into his golden blonde hair. He was built like a football player, and wearing a tan, custom-made suit. He reeked of money. He stood before us, curiously watching us enter, and then he smiled.
"Greetings, Master Temple."
He grimaced at my name tag.
"Or should I call you by your politically incorrect name tag, Archangel? I had hoped to meet you soon."
He looked at Misha.
"I assumed she had been killed when I could no longer sense her, but I see that she has simply found a new master. Good luck. She is quite unruly, and obviously incompetent, since she couldn't even kill you at the courthouse."
Then he turned his back on us and walked into a vast sitting room with a fireplace roaring near one wall. I gambled. "So, what are you doing here, Rago?" I demanded. He frowned, looking momentarily confused at my knowledge of his name.
"First things first," he answered instead. "I believe you announced the Academy Accords."
I nodded.
"Then we must exchange gifts."
He clapped his hands, and three more women entered the room, completely nude. I couldn't make out their eye color, but they probably wore contacts as well. They carried a chest between them, setting it on the ground before their master. He flicked a finger, and the dragons moved about the room to what seemed like pre-informed positions. Two of them stood near my party. One of them stared at Tori a bit longer than the other, and then sized me up and down hungrily, hungry for eating me, or sexing me. I wasn't sure. It looked like it could have been either.
"Since you have requested my hospitality, it's only fair that you present your gift first. But I can't imagine what else you could possibly be hiding on your perfectly tailored frame. One gold bar was impressive, but I do not sense another on you. Perhaps the girl really is the gift."
He smiled politely. I smiled back icily. "No, she is not. She is my snack to nibble as I please." I sensed absolutely nothing from Tori. I noticed my power was still draining out of me, drifting around the room for a target. The Dragon Lord scowled.
"You are leaking, wizard."
"That is not wise. I have already taken precautions, lest you take any more of my harem."
"I knew it was called a harem,"
I exclaimed, grinning. Gunnar shrugged, as if losing a bet. "Speaking of your little harem, what's up with all the different colored dragons? It's like a bag of Skittles in here." I motioned at the array of dragons around us. The Dragon Lord nodded.
"There is a uniqueness to our genetics that doesn't guarantee a child will end up the same color as his or her parents. Just because I am a golden dragon does not mean that I will have a golden heir. I collect as many colors as I can in hopes of increasing my chances of getting the color I desire. But that really isn't why we're here, is it?"
I nodded,
contemplating his words, and idly wondered what color dragon he was hoping for as his heir. He had said that he was a golden dragon, but the dragon hunters had said Rego was a black dragon. Maybe he was lying about being gold. I knew I was missing something. I reached into my pocket to withdraw a heavy piece of paper. Title: To a small diamond mine in Africa, ready to be signed over to you at your leisure. I dare say that it is better than whipping out a bag of uncut diamonds or another bar of gold, I added sarcastically. The dragon lord seemed surprised.
How very thoughtful of you. How long has it been in your family?
He asked, growing interested.
Since 1631.
But we have never minded. Some of my ancestors searched for their engagement stones in the mines, but it has never seen a machine or workforce since our ownership. It was estimated to be quite a promising mine, and my ancestors never had problems finding precious stones there when they chose to. I myself have 5 stones from the mine, ranging from 2 carats to an impressive 5-carat. Of course, that is after it was cut. It was bigger when I found it, I added nonchalantly. The dragon lord practically salivated.
I hope my gift can compare.
I handed the deed to the closest dragon, and she delivered it to her master without a word, and then came back to stand before me. Without preamble, she grabbed my wrist. Before I could even react, Tori slammed her hand down in a chopping motion against the dragon's forearm. The sound of bones snapping was louder than expected, and I felt my stomach shift as blood sprayed across both Tori and I from the dragon's bone tearing through the thin flesh and muscle of her arm. She shrieked, leaping back in surprise and pain. Then she took a step towards Tori, face contorted in rage as her arm dangled loosely at her side.
Stop!
The dragon lord commanded. Tori wiped a bit of blood from her face, glanced down at her glistening fingertips, and then a fine crimson arc across her white dress. She smiled.
My favorite color.
Misha beamed approval, as if it were a direct compliment to her.
Oh, I do like her. You are quite right, Master Temple. She is no light snack. Nibbling would be the only way to taste such a bounty.
The dragon lord chuckled.
But Arya was merely going to guide you to the chest. She really should have asked permission to touch you first. I believe her punishment will suffice,
he asked. I nodded.
She should be healed by tomorrow, or the day after, at any rate, he said casually.
What? I asked.
We heal rather fast, Master Temple. Take Misha, for example. Took a lightning stick through the thigh last night. Yet here she is.
Misha nodded, as she lifted her dress rather high to show me a bare expanse of thigh, as well as a quick glimpse of a red satin garter belt. Tori's eyes went hungry for a moment before she regained her control. I strode over to the chest, wary of the prearranged gift. I undid the clasp and heaved the lid back. Inside sat a delicately worked music box. Tiny, really, especially for such a large chest. I looked up at him, frowning.
This is a gift fit for a young girl, not a grown wizard.
Perhaps I should give you a vending machine ring in exchange, I snapped. He raised a finger.
The story is what is important.
I waited, tapping my foot impatiently.
This was supposedly lifted from Temple Industries the day your parents died, in a mysterious room warded with magic. I reclaimed it from the perpetrator when he tried to flip it for cash. I paid heavily for it, assuming it to be quite valuable, but I have been unable to discover its purpose. No music, no magic, nothing, just a shiny box.
Why shouldn't I believe that you just took it yourself?
I growled, power coursing through my veins as I remembered the video I had just seen in Ashley's office. I hadn't seen anything in the Shadow Man's hands, but apparently he had been a thief as well as a murderer. Gunnar and Tori took a step forward, unsure what to do. I held up a hand.
The Accords, I warned.
The Dragon Lord nodded.
I swear it on my power,
he answered solemnly, drawing a sudden golden dragon talon down his forearm and touching the blood to his forehead. So he really was a golden dragon. The circle of power immediately thrummed around him, and his golden claw was back to human form before I could even study it. Well, shit. He had to be telling the truth, or he would have simply fallen over dead. The magic was legit. Any wizard would know that.
Then who?